welcome to the July 2nd meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Zaltzman? Novick? Fritz?
Here.
Here.
Fish.
Here. Okay.
Yes.
Welcome, everyone. We have a single item on the council calendar this afternoon. I'll ask our council clerk to read that item.
We have to go to C.
Can we just slide back a little bit?
Slide back a bit. We have to go to...
That's okay. Oh, the camera? I think you're okay. That's good.
Well, can you go in front of you? We have to go to...
That's good.
Who?
There you go.
Oh, I get it. Sorry. My bad. Item 733, require activation of closed captioning on televisions in public areas.
Okay, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. As your member of the Portland City Council, I strive to prioritize policies that ensure a more equitable community for all Portlanders. There are many times when we as a council miss important opportunities to create a more inclusive Portland. And we rely on community members to make us aware of opportunities and policy changes that are needed to ensure access for all members of our Portland community. This legislation is an example of how the community input has informed and changed and will change city policy to better serve hearing impaired Portlanders. Closed captioning being turned on in restaurants and other public places will improve access for those with hearing disabilities so that everyone is able to fully participate and experience the full benefit of television programming offered to the public. It will require television receivers located in any part of a facility open to the general public to have closed captioning activated at all times when the facility is open and the television receiver is in use. I'm very happy to be able to bring this to council. And today we're going to hear from Jim House, Carol Studenmund, and David Beers, if you could please come forward. And while you do so, I'm going to introduce the community stalwarts who have pushed for this legislation. Jim House is a native Portlander who recently moved back to Portland after living in Washington, D.C. for many years, working as an advocate for people in the hearing disabled community at the national level. He was communications director of the Communications of the Deaf Incorporated before returning to Portland. Jim knew that San Francisco had passed an ordinance with a similar intent to this one, suggested we work on making it happen in Portland. Thank you for that. Carol Studenmund has owned LNS Captioning for 21 years. She's involved in the community, serving as the chair of the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission and on the board of Portland Community Media. And she's also involved in the National Court Reporters Association and the Oregon Court Reporters Association. David Veers has been an advocate for people with hearing loss for over 30 years in Oregon and Washington. He served for many years as the president of the Portland chapter of the Hearing Loss Association of America and is now involved with Oregon Communications Access Project. David helped get live captions at the Moda Center for Blazer games so all fans can know what the public address announcer is saying. And that includes all of us who perhaps can't tell over the loud yelling at the Moda Center. So that's an example of how this policy is going to benefit all Portlanders. Thank you so much for being here. Please give us your presentation.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. I'm Carol Studenmund, and Jim House is delayed. My last email, he was at the Hollywood Station Max stop, so I know he's en route. And I'm wondering if Max is running a little slow because of the weather, but he's on his way, but we'll get started. I'll just jump in with what I was going to say. As Commissioner Fritz mentioned, I'm Carol Studenmund, one of the owners of LNS Captioning based here in downtown Portland. We caption over 250 hours of live captioning every week with a team of captioners located across the country. I've worked in the captioning field for over 20 years. Through that time, I've met many people with hearing disabilities, including the three gentlemen with whom I've been working on this project. Jim House is a person who's deaf. David Veers is a person who has severe hearing loss and uses two cochlear implants. And Commissioner Stephen Brown, who's not able to... Oh, there's Jim. Who's not able to be with us today is deaf. Captioning is a technology that brings everyone in the hearing disabled world together. regardless of each person's individual means of communication. We're excited about the expanded access this project will bring to people throughout the hearing disabled community. People with hearing disabilities are not the only people who benefit from captions. Many studies show caption TV helps people learn to read and learn English as a second language. Back before TVs were built with caption capabilities built in, which was required 22 years ago yesterday, which is pretty cool, you had to buy a special captioning box in order to see caption TV. The manufacturers of the captioning boxes kept statistics on the buyers of those boxes, and the statistics showed that 40% of the people who went out of their way to get access to caption TV reported they were learning English as a second language. Along those lines, Multnomah County Sheriff Dan Staten turned on the captions on the TVs in the county jail in order to provide a literacy tool to the folks spending time under his care. And he just somehow did that on his own, I've been told by the folks at the county. Our goal in bringing this ordinance before you is to make this process of turning the captions on simple. We ask the city to require captions to be turned on and left on. One of the reasons this request is needed is that it's not always easy to turn on the captions, even when the business proprietor wants to turn them on. Some cable boxes caption menus are hard to navigate, even for me, someone who works in this technology. We know some businesses don't have the time or the knowledge how to turn on the captions, especially if the request for captions is made during a busy rush time. So I'm gonna show you some basic information about how to get the captions turned on. At this time, Portland has two cable providers, Comcast and CenturyLink. I've seen a demonstration of CenturyLink's TV product, and turning on the captions looks like an easy task. When I went online for documentation, I had to go to the chat function to get information, but then they were able to give me answers. And it's as easy as pressing menu on the remote, select settings, select television, click OK, scroll down to close captioning, turn the captions on, and then standard def versus high def choices, and you're done. Regarding Comcast's interface, I went on Comcast's website to find as much information as I could. I found four different links with information about captioning, and we all know Comcast offers lots and lots of services, and so it's a little daunting to climb through all their information to find out how to turn that on. So imagine you're at a busy bar, the timbers are on, they want the captions. Are you really gonna do this? No, you're not gonna try to figure out how to turn on your captions. Some of the older boxes are the ones that are hard to navigate, the newer ones are easier. But as a validation of how clunky Comcast boxes have been throughout the years, in January of 2011, the Federal Communications Commission fined Comcast $500,000 because of that clunkiness, which was so frustrating to so many people. Since that time, new boxes have come on the market that are easier to navigate. There's a lot of information on these links, and it's just a lot to dig through to try to turn on the captions. For satellite providers, DirecTV and Dish Network, it's pretty easy, and Mr. Veers uses, is it Dish Network? Dish Network, and it's as easy as turning on the menu, select, click closed captions, select on, adjust the size of the font and the color, which is kind of cool, and then you're done. For as far as outreach on this project, we have reached out to Coin TV. They did a story about 3 weeks ago that was really well received. And actually has been shared around the country, and we've heard from several hard of hearing and deaf groups that want to follow in Portland's path once we're done. We plan to set up a website with this information about how to turn on captioning to try to help folks. We contacted the Portland Business Alliance and Venture Portland, haven't heard back from them, and we understand the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association has some concerns to share, and we appreciate having that conversation to air this out and make sure that this works well for everyone. And the Vice President of Comcast Government Relations for Portland has said that he will reach his business partners to help them get the captions turned on. So we've got some good support.
Can I just follow up on something you said? You said that who has reached out to Venture Portland, Portland Business Alliance, and the Oregon Restaurant?
We have.
And when you say we?
Me.
So this is, the city is contemplating a change to the code. Commissioner Fritz, what outreach has the city done to engage our stakeholders to get either positive or negative feedback on this?
Tim Crail in my office has been working very closely with Carol and with the Commission on Disability on this.
Okay, I'm the liaison to Venture Portland, and it's not been it's not been on our agenda to discuss. So who have you spoken to there?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I called their office, and they gave me the name of the right person to speak to. Megan? I honestly can't remember.
And have you given them a presentation?
They never got back to me.
Okay, and how about at the Portland Business Alliance? Who have you spoken to there?
I can't remember the name, but it was the government relations lobbyist person. I called them up and asked who's the right person. She responded to my email and said, thanks, and we'll look at this, and that's as far as it went.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And Jim House has joined us, so Jim, you're next.
Test one, test two.
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'm very happy to be here. And it took a lot longer to get here than I had expected, but I just am glad for the opportunity to speak. Can we follow? Are we all good here? We're good? Okay. Continue. Thank you. On behalf of Portlanders Turn On the Captioning Now group, as well as other supporters and allies, thank you for this opportunity to introduce this bill. And to honorary members, Commissioner Fritz and Hales and
Fish,
we look forward to your support. And this new ordinance to allow closed captioning to be displayed on TVs in public areas will help greatly with Portland's invitation to serve as a model on a level of access that is unprecedented for businesses, and more specifically, to educate those who are watching TV who may not be at home like us here. It's a grassroots effort led by many concerned citizens and Portlanders who love to watch captioned television that helps their understanding of important information in noisy areas and entertainment on TV when the sound is turned off and or muted, and also increase the understanding for people to learn English, for example, and children who are learning reading skills as they watch their favorite TV shows. It'll also allow access to information that we recognize as a basic civil right, especially in television, information news, education, entertainment, and so forth. I'm sure that many of you are aware that whatever's on TV is almost impossible in a noisy bar to hear. And because of this, many places have turned on the captions on their TV sets voluntarily. In those places, I know I don't have to ask a staff worker to turn on the captions, only to find that he or she may not know how to turn on the CC button, or the TV remote might be locked away. Therefore, requiring captions to be activated on all television sets in public areas and all the time that would be spent on staff training would ensure that everyone has full and equal access to information anytime, even if they're away from home, enjoying all the good food and the brews of their choice, whether it be coffee, tea, or beer that Portlandia has to offer. Televisions are widely used in facilities that are open to the public, such as hospital waiting rooms, bars, restaurants, health clubs, bus stations, appliance stores, and the airport, Those are some of the locations where the general public can gain access to television broadcasts. All televisions in use now have the capability to display captions. Televisions in these locations enable anyone to obtain the latest news reports during an emergency, or watch their local sports teams in action, or simply pass the time while waiting for an appointment or a service to be completed. 1 in 5 Americans have hearing disabilities, and that large of a population of Portlanders should never be excluded from accessing crucial information. Additionally, captions help everyone else overcome the excessive background noise that often interferes with hearing audio. While the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, requires television programming to be captioned, Portland can take a step further by having these captions on, anywhere and everywhere for everyone to see, even if we're not at home. The City of San Francisco passed a similar ordinance in 2008 with public support. The state of Maryland followed with a statewide law. It's time now to bring that effort to Portland. Now. In closing, passing this ordinance is one simple way that the City of Roses can further the accessibility goals of the Americans with Disability Act that was enacted 25 years ago this month. Today, we ask that City Council take this important step and pass this ordinance. It's easy to do, and it's a win-win situation for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, welcome.
Yes, I'm up.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is David Veers. For well more than 30 years, I have had a severe hearing loss and wore hearing aids. Today, I am completely deaf without the use of my bilateral cochlear implants. For a moment, I would like you to imagine you have a hearing loss and are in an establishment, perhaps a restaurant or sports bar, where there are televisions. A place like Red Robin comes to mind, a place that I visit quite often. Suddenly, whatever is being shown on TV is replaced by a news commentator. All you, as a person with hearing loss, know is that some kind of news is being broadcast, and suddenly the people around you are reacting in a stressful way. It could be the announcement of something benign, or it could be something as calamitous as a tornado or a terrorist attack just down the street from your location. You have no way of knowing because you can't understand what is being said on the television. You cannot even effectively ask another patron because of your hearing loss and the noise in that kind of environment. However, if the captions were turned on, you would be in the position of having the same information as everyone else. Please recognize that you and or a friend or loved one could be facing exactly the same same situation. If not today, then in the future. The incidence of hearing loss is a condition that tends to increase substantially with age. The ordinance before you will benefit numerous people, maybe even you at some point. Another point, while this ordinance would benefit many people, it is not meant to be onerous or punitive towards businesses. In fact, compliance with this ordinance would be cost-free to businesses. Finally, I would like to address the issue of possible complaints by clientele or patrons of businesses displaying captions on televisions. First of all, this is unlikely to be a problem. I say this based upon the fact that there are a number of businesses that are already voluntarily displaying captions in their establishments. If customer complaints were common, these businesses would not be doing this. I have been asked what a business owner might say if a complaint were to be made. My response is they could respond in the same way as you would if a person were to complain about the number of handicapped parking spaces in the parking lot of their establishment. The business is simply complying with the law. My last point on this issue is that this ordinance is in keeping with the spirit of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The ADA is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year, so virtually all citizens are well aware that accommodations are made to persons with disabilities. By the way, the concept of this ordinance has already been endorsed by such organizations as the Portland Commission on Disability, the Office of Community Technology, Oregon Communication Access Project, the Oregon Association of the Deaf, the Portland Chapter of the National Hearing Loss Association of America, and the Oregon State Association of that same organization. Thank you for your attention to this matter. I'd like to just mention, I have with me some journals. These are actually prepared by the Oregon State Association of Hearing Loss Association of America. I will give them to this young lady over here for each of you. If you know somebody with a hearing loss, you could pass it out, or you can keep it for yourself down the road. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Do you have any questions right now?
Other questions for Carol or our resource team here?
Yeah, how many, potentially, what's the universe of businesses that are impacted by this? If you take bars, restaurants, hospitals, bus stations, stores, and et al., what do you estimate is the number of businesses who might be impacted?
I don't know. It depends on if they have a television, so it's hard to say, you know, like how many places in the county have a public place and have a TV or don't. So it's that's hard to pin down.
And I notice in the materials we have that the let me just find it. The Portland Commission on Disability at its regular meeting in December took this issue up.
That's correct.
And voted in favor of it.
That's correct.
And what kind of outreach did PCOD do for that hearing in terms of potential stakeholders who impacted, inviting them to be present?
I don't know. Jim, David, were you there at that meeting?
I sent out an action letter, action notification. Sent out an action notification
to several different groups for today and previously. The Portland Commission on Disabilities also forwarded that information. So we've had a lot of really good support for our case. And we've had a lot of backers all along since we began doing presentations since December.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
I would like to just add one thing. Jim mentioned backers. People throughout the country have actually been hearing about this ordinance that we're trying to get passed here. And the National Hearing Loss Association of America's convention was just held at the end of June. And they brought that information there, and it created a lot of excitement amongst the people there. So we've been getting some contacts already about people wanting to know what's happening, wanted to know what steps to go through, et cetera, because they're interested in doing the same thing in their locations. Kansas City is one that comes to mind right offhand. So it would be nice, I think, if Portland could be a leader in this particular area.
Let me just follow up on that. I think this is a splendid idea, and I support it. I have to wear two hats. One is that when we're about to create a mandate that applies as widely as this, we have basic rules that we give people a chance to weigh in. And sometimes what we learn when we have those kinds of hearings is that there's a way to actually strengthen the legislation, or sometimes we learn about unintended consequences. So I wholeheartedly support this ordinance, but we have to make sure that in addition to people that understand the issue and support it, where we are imposing a mandate, that we have heard from people that are going to have to comply with the law, because sometimes they tell us things that help us get it even better. And right now, my concern is that this has been almost a closed conversation. And I don't know that there are enough people out there who've been engaged in the conversation, who have a chance to come and tell us, A, what they think about it, and B, how they could strengthen it. I'm not interested in hearing people say we shouldn't do it. But I am interested in making sure if, I mean, a question I asked earlier was how many people are impacted by this. This council spends months doing hearings and outreach on things that have a fraction of the impact that this will have in terms of a mandate, because we want to make sure we get it right. I'm the Venture Portland coordinator, and Venture Portland has not been engaged in this process. And I would like to have them here. I would like to have them weighing in on this and telling us, does it work? Where are the circumstances that it might not? Is the enforcement mechanism that we're contemplating here effective? Is the fine big enough or too big? I don't know. But that's the gist of it. I'm persuaded this is the thing to do. I want to make sure that I'm hearing from enough people who perhaps aren't familiar with this to help us make sure we get it right. And I assume that a lot of good people have worked on this and that this is their best effort. But again, I just want to make sure that we're not just affirming something that's a good idea. I want to make sure it's a workable idea.
You want to do your due diligence, in other words.
Well, but I support the idea. I support the concept. So I don't have to search my soul, my heart, to agree with you that we should remove barriers in our community to people across the board so they can have the same rights that I have in every public setting. But I'm just flagging the question about whether there's been a sufficient amount of outreach, particularly where we're about to create a law that applies to a lot of people, many of whom may not know that we're having this conversation. So that's just a concern that I have.
Just as a point of information, Commissioner, after the Commission on Disability held their hearing and took their position, they did a press release, which was broadly distributed. I did a TV interview maybe 3 weeks ago. I have had almost no input from anybody about this. And I know that people have seen it because I've seen various comments. And we've now got the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. And when you're talking about impacts, what kind of impacts are you concerned about or unintended consequences?
Mr. Fritz, I don't run a bar. I don't run a hospital. This has an exception, for example, for people where it's administratively not feasible. I don't know what that applies to if they're incapable of displaying closed captioning. Technologically, I don't know what that means. That's in the statute. I can't define it. There's a proposal here that the city attorney's office and our existing code people enforce it. I don't know whether that's the right thing or not. I'm not quarreling with the concept, but it's somewhat unprecedented for us to say that because we've done a press release and a TV interview and haven't heard anything, we assume that the community has been engaged and we've gotten their feedback.
Well,
I haven't had any feedback from this, but I suspect a lot of people don't know that we're having this discussion.
We've had a time certain on the agenda for several months on this, and we published it as normal. We have a number of folks who are very diligently watching our council commission. We have it, as I say, as a time certain. So
we also have a community, an impact statement, Commissioner Fritz, and you are the most scrupulous person I know on impact. And it has not a single reference to the city doing any outreach on this specifically. So, again, I play referee on these things. I'm not advocating for someone that might have a point of view, but we invite people to come and offer us a perspective.
I'd like to mention that the state of Maryland has something similar to this, but it's not as strong because it basically relies upon a customer or patron of a business to request that the captioning be turned on. And what they've found is the problem is the staff doesn't know where the remote is or doesn't know how to physically turn on the captions. And so the business winds up being in non-compliance because somebody's made a request. And he can't fulfill it because the staff is not trained. And, of course, in this bars and restaurants, things like this, you have a high turnover of people. And so there's a constant problem with retraining new staff, that type of thing. What this ordinance does, while it is it basically says, let's turn the captions on to begin with, and then the business doesn't have to worry about it. Once it's turned on, it's hands off. It's just on.
And I'll give you a real-world example. And, yes, I think my hearing is actually as I age, becoming more challenged. But I work out at a gym in the morning where they have TVs, and the sound is turned off. And so about half of them have the closed captioning, and that means I can actually watch those shows and follow what's going on because I'm not a lip reader. So I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I just want to make sure that when we're about to create a citywide mandate that applies to a lot of people, I want to make sure that we've given everybody a chance to weigh in, because once we regulate, we mean it. And once we adopt something, it's law. And I don't have a lot in front of me which says we've done much in the way of outreach, and maybe we have, but that's one of our jobs, is to make sure that people know what we're about to legislate.
I just wanted to add something as well. Jim House is here and added something. From a business perspective, if we have captioning on in all, have it on all the time, then it reduces the amount of training required for the staff to teach them how to set it up, how to turn it on, how to use the remote, et cetera. It'll also entice customers to stay there longer because they'll be enticed to stay and watch TV, and maybe they'll order more brews. And so I think the impact on a business is going to be minimal.
Commissioner, we have taken the unprecedented, in my recollection, in 6.5 years, we've scheduled a time certain for the vote, because we wanted to have a time that our sign language interpreters could come and be here. So if it turns out there is a storm of protest before next week, we could certainly continue the hearing and hear from some more individuals next week.
Well, I want to weigh in. This has been a helpful discussion, and I appreciate further comment from our experts here. But I want to share a little of Commissioner Fish's concern, just to make sure that we have communicated what we're doing. Commissioner Fritz, no one on this council should ever deserve the label of being sneaky. And if there was such a ranking, you were the least sneaky among the five of us. So the last person I would expect to do something without public engagement would be you. But I think part of the problem here might also be the calendar, and maybe why we haven't necessarily either heard affirmation or opposition to this proposal is that it was on the council calendar in a very general way, and I don't think we like to believe everyone pays careful attention to what we do in this chamber. As you may remember, we had a very boisterous argument in this chamber earlier this week, which if the news media had been paying attention, they would have covered, just because it was kind of a knockdown, drag-out fight with our city auditor. And the tree fell in the forest, as the expression goes, and apparently no one heard, because no one in the news media covered that confrontation between a couple members of the council, me included, and our auditor. I'm being a little playful here, but the point is that it's 2 hours before the beginning of a 3-day weekend in the middle of summer, when people pay the least attention to what we do here. And therefore, a little verification that people know what we're doing is appropriate. I'm also in the same camp as you and Commissioner Fish on the policy here. I think it's good public policy. And I can't imagine that there will be an argument against this that would persuade me that we shouldn't do it. But it would behoove us, I think, to make sure that the people who will have to follow this law know about it. And at least one of them has come back and said, well, we have a few issues. I appreciate hearing that. Again, it doesn't persuade me that we shouldn't do it. But I think the various business and public entities that will have to follow these rules ought to know that they're happening. And I'm concerned, not through any lack of effort on your part or the Disabilities Commission's part, but just because of the time of year, that people might not be breathlessly following what the Portland City Council is doing. Again, I'm being a little playful about our own importance in the world. Sometimes we think it's very high.
I wanted to add to that. The executive director of the Restaurant Lodging Association fell into that category of not quite following the calendar exactly. He thought this was next week, and I did let him know it was today. And, you know, his reason, which I'm sure he'll confirm, is that, you know, the matters in Salem.
Right, it's the last precedence. 3 days of a legislative session.
Yeah, so exactly. So
that's another calendar problem.
Can I just add something, Charlie? We had a celebration of the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act this week at Council. And Commissioner Fritz and the mayor and I had the honor of speaking and celebrating 25 years of progress and acknowledging we have more to do. And when officials in our position raise questions of just making sure that we have enough sunshine and transparency in what we're doing, and yet have our value system, please don't mistake it for a questioning of the merits of the proposal or the value of doing it. And I share Commissioner Fritz's sentiment that this is something that, you know, has been, you've done us, this is great that you brought this to our attention. Lots of things there are lots of needs out there that actually, it turns out, they're in plain daylight. They are in front of us and we don't see it. The whole country's had a new view in the last week about having the Confederate flag in public places. It's been there for a long time, but all of a sudden the country has shifted. Getting back to this issue, it may be that one way to cure this, just to make sure that no voice is excluded, is since this is a first reading of an ordinance, is just to add an extra week in the return date and give people a chance to submit anything in writing. And if no one submits and no one raises an issue, that means we have an enviable position of a community embracing this. And hopefully that will mean limited enforcement. But if we do get a few people who say, there's something we haven't thought through, well, then humility teaches us that we consider that and see whether there's a way to improve it. That's all we're saying.
I think that's an excellent idea, to postpone the vote. The fact that you're postponing the vote anyway for a week gives you some time to do it. An extra week, I think I applaud that.
Right. Thank you very much. Thanks for it. This has been a helpful discussion.
Thank you.
So, are there other folks that want to testify on this, please?
Yes, we have four people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up.
Thank you very much.
Four. Steve McCoy, Barbara Robertson, and Philip J. Wolf.
Good afternoon. I'm going to go first. Go ahead.
Hello. For the record, my name is Steve McCoy. I'm the president and CEO of the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. And I'm here on behalf of our Portland members, pretty much the bar, tavern, sports bar segment of the industry. We have some restaurants that have, you know, TVs, but pretty generally where the impact for our membership would be those sports bar and the neighborhood bar kinds of folks. And I want to say, first of all, we're sensitive to the issues involved here. We're not adamantly opposed and saying, no, don't do it. There's some issues that I'd like to point out that I think can be considered and maybe make this a little more user-friendly for some of the affected members. And so I'd like to go through that. And I've just an apology, as Carol said, and Carol's kind enough to call me, and I have called her back, and we've had several discussions, and I think they've been, fine. We haven't been argumentative or, you know, there hasn't been butting of heads here. It's trying to reach a consensus on something that works for everybody, and hopefully it's a compromise and everybody goes away happy. I would say, in talking to the business owners, and again, I didn't have time to pull a whole membership here, but I talked to 8 to 10 business owners, probably operating 30 establishments around the city, and their biggest concern, real frankly, was what you're doing, it doesn't meet their business model. Now, I'm not saying don't do it, but they're saying they have concerns with a model that really basically is one that, whether it's a sports bar, a neighborhood bar with TVs, TVs are usually not on because it's still a bar there to have people come sit together, talk, enjoy each other's company. And when you have 4 or 5 competing TVs with all the different program on, the cacophony of noise makes it impossible to have those conversations. So their policy is sounds off. And if people ask them to turn the sound on, the policy is the sound stays off. and they don't turn the sound on. And their so that's their model. They're concerned, and so they're concerned with having to turn the captioning on every TV, because they get, when the captioning's on the TVs and folks are watching some sporting activity, they get requests to turn it back off. Now, I would say, as I asked this question, I did discover there's sort of two models out there in the industry. The older model is one where they all have basically Comcast and either Dish or Direct coming in to get the sports programming that they want. In the older models, though, it's just a variety of television sets up and running, hooked to that system to get the, just like at our house. But they've got the ability then to turn the captioning on and off on every one of those TVs individually. That's the one segment. Second segment, which is the one Carol ran into and which people have run into, is these newer, bigger establishments, you know, like a Buffalo Wild Wings or the larger places. They're getting in a centrally managed system where it's almost more like there's monitors up there, and, you know, there's a central place controlling them. And right now, for some reason, they're not programmed to be able to turn the captioning off, on or off, by individual monitor. So it's all on or all off.
But under this ordinance, it would be all on. So
it would be all on. But my point is, for those other folks, you know, we talked about ADA, and you know, in ADA, if somebody comes in with a disability, they've got to make a reasonable attempt for an accommodation to correct it. Mm-hmm. If you've got the ability to turn captioning on and somebody requests it, that's what should happen. Now, does it happen? Clearly, the testimony says it doesn't. And so, real frankly, are we wild about having another ordinance that has some a bite in it to force them to do so? Well, if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing anyway, and it takes the city ordinance, complaint-driven, apparently, from what I see here, to get them to comply with the law and train their people properly and turn that on when their request is made, then so be it. We're not here to defend folks that aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing in the first place. We are there to represent people that are trying to do the right thing, have the ability to do it, or telling me they have the ability to do it. And so that's where we're really at. And so I would say a reasonable amendment in our mind would be for those folks who can do this individually by individual TV, at least in the short term, if they get the request and they've got folks at a table and the request is made at the TV they're viewing, please turn the captioning on. They're required to do it. And if it's a segment of the room, then they got to turn the two or three on in that segment. But they don't have to turn it on and keep it on an ongoing basis, full time the business is open, when people aren't asking and there is no demand for it. And frankly, their testimony or their feedback to me is their customers generally don't want the captioning on. As a general rule, they ask for it to be turned off, and they don't want to have the ability. They're in the business to satisfies their customers. And if they've got customers in there saying, please turn captioning off on the TVs I'm watching, I don't want it.
And tell me more about that, because this is useful, I think, feedback. When people ask for the captioning to be turned off, why are they asking for it to be turned off?
Well, again,
I mean, typically, I understand.
What I was told by the owners was it's typically folks watching sports action, and it's on the bar, and it's covering up part of the screen, and they're missing the action. And if you're a sports guy, like I am on ESPN, a lot of the sports, the runners on the bottom, they're showing all the different scores and things that are going on, are on the bottom of the screen that tends to get covered up. That's the explanation I was given.
Okay.
See, the other argument, though, is let's take Overlook Restaurant, which is my son's favorite restaurant. Were it not for closed captioning, we wouldn't be able to follow anything that's going on the screens, and it's both news shows and sports shows. So we're in the camp of liking the captions because it allows us to follow the narrative, because they don't turn the volume on. And my own personal view is I don't see it as a great inconvenience that I can't read all the endless streams of data on the bottom. Oh. I'm not sure I can see that anyway from my seating. But how many different businesses do you represent? The Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, how many businesses do you represent?
We're statewide, 3,000 members.
How about in Portland?
In Portland, we've got about, I have to do about, It's going to be hard for me to say off the top of my head, but we've probably got about 1,000 members, probably operating more businesses than that. Mm-hmm. You know, to the point you asked, by the way, there's about 3,200 restaurants in Multnomah County. So it's, you can get to the point, you know, you're probably in the 2,500 restaurants in the city, I would think.
Not all of them have televisions. But
not
yes,
all of them have right, televisions. Right. That's restaurants. When you get right, to bars, there's 7,000 licensed bars in the state. Probably a third of them are probably in Portland or in the Met. So, you know, you're talking, it's not an insubstantial. It's probably a couple thousand businesses that this would impact.
How many of your clients or your members have told you that they can't comply with this because they don't have the technology to comply with this?
No one has. I mean, the technology is there, and the way it's written, they can all do it. I'm just saying, for those businesses, you know, when you're asking them to do something 24/7 or as long as they're open, you know, from opening to closing, and if there's no demand or there's no folks in there asking for the captioning, and we've got people not asking them to turn it off, to handcuff them so they can't meet their customers' wishes, just isn't in the best interest of any business. They're there to satisfy their customer. Now, what I basically say in this testimony, probably not too clearly or well, we're willing, I would like, and in the time we're off, meet again with Carol and her constituents and see if we meet some common ground. And again, for those folks where it's individual TVs and they can turn them off and on, I have no problem saying you have to turn them on or you have to have a segment of them turned on to be able to, for folks to be able to access it the way they want, but to have them all on when they're not all being used for that issue, for my members and frankly for myself, I wonder why it's an all or nothing program when we can get something in the middle that everybody accommodates everybody.
That's an issue we're going to have to grapple with. Let me according to the materials that we have in the testimony, this has been implemented at least in two other places, the city of San Francisco and the state of Maryland. Do you have any information you can share with us based on sister restaurant associations in terms of how those have operated?
No, I don't. Can find out for you, though. I mean, I can get that information.
Well, useful.
I think it would be useful to us because we may be talking about theoretical concerns that after some experience with the law, turns out that the general public adjusts and doesn't find it mm-hmm. such a significant impact. And since we've got a comparable city and a state that's done this, we'd be interested in what your feedback is.
I know
is
folks
on
in those places, so I can certainly reach out and
That'd be helpful.
Ask the question, and we'll
Thank
see
you.
What we get back. Associations everywhere, as you well know.
Right.
So in terms of some TVs being on, the captions being on, and some not, are you advocating for segregation in the restaurant?
No,
that the
I'm being... just saying, if somebody is hearing impaired, is sitting comes in, sits at a table, that TV is in front of them, they want to watch it, they should be able to say, turn the captioning on the TV that I want utilized.
In most establishments that I frequent to watch sports, it's not a case of you have your own TV at a particular place. It's a communal one.
Well,
so are you saying that the majority don't want it on, then the person
no,
who...
No, I'm saying if a person that's hearing impaired comes in, sits down at a table, whether it's a bunch of friends or by themselves, and four tables are watching TV, and they say they would like the captioning turned on, they have to turn it on.
Why should
to
they
me,
have
that's
to ask?
An ADA thing.
Why should they have to ask?
Well, you know, I guess the only way I can answer that question is go the other way. Why should the rest of the people who maybe don't want, or I've been told don't want the captioning on, have to have the captioning on if there's nobody that's hearing impaired watching the TVs?
What about emergency situations where, as was mentioned, where there's some kind of an alert that comes on? There's not going to be time to turn on the captioning at that point.
That's, you know, I have no answer for that other than that's far and few between, and to have something on for, you know, the full hours of operation, everyone in the room on an ongoing basis, on the off chance that there is an emergency impacting the folks in that establishment, does not seem to be a real viable reason for me to put this in effect. I think there's other reasons that are viable, but I don't think that's one of them.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next?
Hello, my name is Philip J. Wolf.
Hello, commissioners, Fritz, Fish, and Hales. Hello. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and testify about my perspective on this potential ordinance. First of all, let me give you a little bit about my background. I serve on the Portland Commission, the PCOD, the Portland Commission on Disabilities, and also I review the Oversight Committee for the Vocational Rehab, and also I work with Public Safety under PSD, the Public Safety PCOD's Commission. I'm the Commission Chair there. So I'm also a member of the COAB, the use of enforcement. So anyway, there's a lot of different labels that I carry, but I just would like to say I serve several communities, and I'm also a representative for the Northwest Alliance for the Deaf. I'm also a member of the Oregon Association of the Deaf. So the bottom line is I have quite a wide outreach, and I'm here to let you know about some people who know about this bill and what they feel about it. There's other bills that we have concerns about as well. A lot of things are going on right now, but I'm here to represent the community for this one. I believe when I was 7 or 8 years old, I was the first deaf person to be here in the state, to be in the state of New York to advocate for captioning. I was a member of the Lions Club, and they took my picture and put it in the paper for that, and I had made that happen on my own. Even though I didn't know how to, I just did it anyway. I was so excited. I was a kid. I was like a kid with a new toy, and I wanted things to work. And I saw this technology, and I thought, well, how does it work, and how can people know about this? And I just got it done and enabled it and got the captions on. Now, it was at that point, when I was 7, that I did not have any English acquisition at that point at all, at age 7. From a baby until that age, I barely picked up a thing. I couldn't read. But now, with captioning that I have at home, I'm completely addicted, and I watch it all the time. And it's not just to understand what they're talking about, but it forces me to read. And that's when I started to pick up my English skills, when I was really, really fortunate enough. And I say, thank you. I'm blessed to be able to have learned that, to be able to read and write English now. So now, today in Portland, I've been here for 5 years, and I love Portland. It's a very unique city with cultural diversity, second to none. And I have a few experiences that may illustrate my passion for this kind of access. I just want to remind the commission that to not have captioning on in TVs in public places is a violation of ADA. It blocks access. For example, I went to the DMV to get a new license when I moved here from New York, or from Washington. And there was a TV there that had audio information about safety and about traffic rules and seatbelt laws and so forth, but there was no captions on it. There was no access that I could get to that safety information that was crucial, meaning I was marginalized over those who could hear it. So if there's a refusal to put captions on, I wouldn't want them turned on just because they might lose customers. There are actual reasons for having that access. And that would support the idea of hearing privilege being privy to that. The same thing goes with a term called audism, A-U-D-I-S-M, audism. When I ask for captions to be turned on, sometimes I don't know how. And so, you know, if they don't know how, I can actually say, watch me, I'll show you on the remote. First you do this, second you do this, and I point it out, then the captions come on, and I can provide that training. It's simple, it's easy. So I'd say, now let me test you. Here's the remote, and show me what you do first. Okay, good, now which channel? And then they follow the instructions that I just showed them, and they said, oh, that's it? I said, yeah, that was it. So I get thanks, and it's relatively simple. A month later, I came back into the DMV to check and see about the captions, and they were still on from that time. So I really appreciated the employee who turned those on, and I also go to the DART Cafe. It's in the central, the Lloyd Center district. There's one place called the DART Cafe. It's a coffee place. It's my favorite coffee place. And there's two large screen TVs there, just like this one, even bigger, two of them. And I had requested that the captions be turned on there. And I got the, well, I don't know. I don't know. And I said, well, this is a place of business. And it was packed with customers. And I asked if I could take the remote. And they said, sure. So once again, I taught them how to operate it, to turn on the captions, gave it back. And they said, oh, OK. So I said, well, now you can do that to your other TV. And they tried it, got it to work. And it wasn't difficult. And I say, that's right. It wasn't difficult. And thank you very much. So I had asked, is the sound on? And they said, no, it's muted. So I'm thinking, OK, how do they get information from the TV if there's no sound on? The captions had to have been on to allow that access for everyone, regardless of whether they had a hearing impairment or could hear or not. So I've been doing that for a long time, asking people to turn captions on. And people generally accept that request. One day, I went to a hotel, and there was a conference there. And we were eating breakfast in a group, and there was a large room full of people. And there's a big TV with no captions. So I asked the front desk, is it possible to put the captions on, please? And they said, no, well, we don't want to upset customers. And I got some resistance. So I wrote down on a piece of paper, I said, I'm on the Portland Commission for Disabilities, and it's important to have equal access. Can I show you how to put the captions on? And I'm a customer, and I think I could show you. And they said, sure. So we did it, and we got the captions on. I said, thank you. And there was no complaints. And it's still on there. I've checked just to make sure. I've rolled up my sleeves and monitored it closely. So to wrap up my testimony, the OEHR, Oregon,
Office of Equity and Human Rights.
Office of Equity and Human Rights. Thank you. The building, it's the Commonwealth Building, has a TV in the lobby. And guess what? No captions. So equal access is all about equal access, not just about, not without captions. So I made a reminder and asked for the captions to be turned on. And I don't. They tend to turn them off when I leave, which that is not my point. But the point is, we want to pass this ordinance to educate people, excuse me, about equal access and all that that entails. We're not asking for all 50 states to pass this ordinance, like equal marriage, equal gay rights marriage, at all. We're just asking for Portland to be a model for others that have the issues that we do and know that we have it and we have the it. So pass this ordinance, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions for me?
I have a couple, if I could. And first of all, the last time I heard someone with as many leadership positions as you, sir, was when Steve Weiss appeared before us. So I think we've now... I think there are two Steve Weisses now of people that are doing, going above and beyond in terms of community service. Has there been any prior effort to address this issue with the state legislature?
Yes, there has.
And could
yes,
you
there has. PCOD has. Did a presentation, and we came and did a presentation about this before. We did some follow-up, but it wasn't much of a lot of action until now. We've had the opportunity to come and really be a part of this, and maybe did that answer your question?
Sure, but there's been no, has any bill been drafted at the state level and introduced or debated, or is this the first time legislation has been drafted and debated in Oregon?
This is the first at a city level. There's been nothing at the state level.
Okay.
It's been a challenge. But for the city to have, there's more potential to get it done at the city level.
City often is required to act first and then leverages statewide changes in the law. One of the examples that you gave us had to do with going to another governmental office. And that got my attention, not just because I've also had some bad experiences at the DMV, but because I don't know whether the way this is drafted, it covers county and state and federal government offices that are here, or whether we have the right to so regulate. So your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, first of all, OAD did an official assessment in 2015 and found that we have 186,000 deaf people in the state of Oregon. And so they are excluding that population, 186,000 people in the state. And not to mention, for people who want to learn English from captions, there are also second language users that are acquiring English skills from the captioning that would benefit from this. So I think that it's appropriate for the city to pass the bill and then encourage others to do the same. I don't think we'll see a huge impact, and they'll realize that. We'll have it'll be a huge impact for the deaf community. It'll be a much larger impact, improving their accessibility, and then others will want to follow because it'll make them look good. It'll really improve the reputation they have.
So one of the things that I'm going to follow up on and ask the city attorney is whether the definition of public accommodation and the statute that's cited gives us the authority to regulate public spaces that are leased, owned, or operated by other governmental bodies. And I don't know the answer, and I don't know whether there's a legal complication, but it's a question I'm going to ask because you make, I think, a very excellent point that it isn't just restaurants and bars and hospitals and other places. It could be wherever you're doing business, and that could be the DMV, which is a state entity. It could be a federal office where you're going to get benefits, and there's information on a screen. So I'll pose that question to the city attorney to find out, A, what's the scope of this in terms of public accommodations, and B, do we have the authority to, in effect, regulate another governmental entity? And I appreciate you raising that particular example, sir.
I also wanted to add that at the Social Security office, it's the same thing. They have TVs there that aren't captioned. And those typically talk about how to apply for new Social Security IDs. And I'm lucky because I can read lips. But the point is that there's no caption there for others. And a lot of deaf people receive benefits from the Social Security Administration. And I can only imagine how much information they miss because it's not captioned. And that's just one of many examples. I travel around, and a lot of times I'll bring it to their attention. It's not my job, but it's part of who I am, wanting to improve and encourage people to change.
Just need to note that it must be exhausting to have to ask for accommodations all the time. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you. It's an education opportunity, and it's okay.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Barbara Robertson. I am a member of the Oregon Association for the Deaf and lifelong hard of hearing. Looking at me, hearing me speak, you probably couldn't pick out that I'm hard of hearing. I might be your coworker, I might be your friend, I might be an acquaintance, someone you just wouldn't know has this particular disability. As so many of us are aging, look at the baby boomers alone, they're catching up to me and my hearing loss. And increasingly, they're going to be in need of those captions. Previous historical models of disability have put the onus very much on the individual. It's the individual who needs to persevere, to ask, to overcome, whatever. The Americans with Disabilities Act was an effort to at least move toward an era of universal access. We haven't gotten there. We're nowhere near there. We're still stuck in old models where the individual needs to make a special request because it's a special accommodation. It's over here. It's different. I'm not that different. Most of us here are not that different, ultimately. We're diverse, but ultimately, we shouldn't, none of us should be treated as needing a special thing over here that we have to jump through a hoop for. And I would disagree. It isn't okay. It's tiring. It's one definition I've heard recently of what privilege is the stuff we don't have to think about. Being followed in a store, or being pulled over constantly, or in our case, having to ask for the captioning to be turned on so we can understand what's going on. That puts the onus squarely on the individual. And I think there hasn't been enough progress in technology to really address this need, as we've heard here today. I think that universalizing, making it an everyday experience to have the captions on, will shine a big spotlight on the shortcomings. We understand there's going to be issues to work through. There are bound to be issues to work through in implementing this and making it something that can be implemented gracefully by our area businesses. By having it as a matter of course to have the captions on, the industry itself will need to be in better compliance, and it'll make it an easier experience for all consumers, whether at home or in a public place, to have this access instead of treating it as a special privilege or a special thing we do for those people. We're in an era where we should be treating this as part of the broader future direction of universal access, and I encourage Portland to be a model for this. Thank you.
So, Mayor, before we lose this distinguished panel, our crack legal team has actually got us an answer. So I want to just follow up on a comment that was made. So the particular legislation in front of us defines public accommodation very broadly. And a particular interest to me is it defines it in one section as any place that is open to the public and owned or maintained by a public body, regardless of whether the place is commercial in nature. So we'll make sure that the public body piece is read broadly. By the way, a place of accommodation under the statute that we're referencing in the law does not include the following. This is interesting. Does not include a Department of Corrections institution. So it doesn't include a prison. Doesn't include a state hospital, a youth correction facility, a local correction facility. And then, because we are talking about public accommodations, it doesn't include any institution, club, or place of accommodation that is private. So a place that restricts access just to members, as opposed to the members of the broader public. But it looks to me like it defines public body broadly. Anyway, we'll go down one more level to make sure that we're not somehow preempted for regulating state and federal. But it seems to me if you're going to wait 2 hours at DMV and then not be able to get the information off a monitor, that's a serious deficiency. So thank you, sir.
Great. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
The last person who signed up is Ann McLaughlin.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm Ann McLaughlin. I'm the president of the Portland chapter of the Hearing Loss Association of America. I won't repeat all of the supportive comments and explanations that have been given by other people who've testified. I think they've done a very good job. I will say that I think this is a way to give full and equal access to all people. In terms of the burden that it puts on the affected businesses and public places, as I understand it, the enforcement is designed to be complaint-driven and to encourage compliance. It's not a way of raising revenue through fines. So I think that the ultimate burden on those businesses and entities will be something that they won't find hard to deal with. any more than those of us who figured out how to turn on our own captions on our TV sets have, for the most part. And in a way, this is rather like curb cuts, which were not seen as useful or acceptable to many people before they were installed, but which are now considered a regular part of our daily life. I would like to echo Barbara Robertson's comment just now that the prevalence of putting the burden onto the person with a disability, to ourselves, in order to receive an accommodation that makes us, if we're forceful enough and want to bring attention to ourselves and our disability, then we get to become equal. And that's really not a fair burden, I think. And I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you very much. Questions? Any further? Thank you so much.
Thanks.
So I think we may have received testimony from everyone who wants to speak. Sounds like there's an interest in the council, Commissioner Fritz, in at least giving people a chance to give us some further feedback. I know you've got a second reading scheduled for next week.
We don't have a full complement next week on council. I would just, if Commissioner Fritz does not object, I would just suggest we put it over for 2 weeks for a vote.
We need a time certain, so could you tell us when is an appropriate time certain?
In 2 weeks. That morning has the Mount Tabor on it, and
15th.
The afternoon has Private for Hire for 2 hours, and then that Thursday, Commissioner Fritz and you were gone, Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
If we go 3 weeks out, if that wouldn't be too far, the July 22nd, I have
everyone morning. But me.
I don't think Charlie's
right.
Here. Could we, Carla? Are we allowed to put it up first, prior to Private for Hire?
What are we doing on Private for Hire?
The mayor's gone that afternoon.
It's the report. It's the follow-up report on Uber.
The mayor's gone that afternoon of the 15th.
Right, I'm gone. I leave that afternoon. I'm here in the morning, gone in the afternoon.
So is Mount Tabor the only thing we have in the morning?
Yes, but
and what time is that scheduled for?
What is that scheduled, the Mount Tabor?
What time?
Oh, it's the 9:30.
9:30.
So that means 10. What if we bump this to 9:30 and just move Mount Tabor to 10?
We'd have to list them both at 9:30. We could
Let's
do that because we've announced that date.
Let's do that.
Let's take it up first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I suspect that we will hear from a few people, but we will not hear from a large number, and therefore it won't take a great deal of time.
And so, what our preference is, if we're doing this, is if there's additional issues or concerns. Restaurant Association is here, and perhaps the gentleman will furnish us with some information about how it's working in San Francisco or in the state of Maryland. I'll reach out to Venture Portland and make sure that if there's any unique concerns by small operators that they want us to be aware of, that they submit that in writing. It's not our intent, Mayor, to have a follow-up hearing, but to consider whatever additional information we have and then take this to a vote. Is that correct?
Yes. That's my intention. Does that sound okay, Commissioner?
So unless there are amendments, just to be clear, unless there are any amendments, there will be just a vote in 2 weeks. Of course, you're all welcome to be here, and we will have sign language interpretation at that time. However, we would be expecting to vote in 2 weeks' time.
So you, Commissioner Fritz, just as you have a passion for addressing term limits on city boards and commissions, I have a passion in getting to a point where amendments are filed in advance of the hearing for the benefit of the public and so that we have a chance to hear them. So may we agree, Mayor, in this instance, not to set a policy, but in this instance, that any amendments that are to be filed by the Friday before the hearing so the public has an opportunity to know of them and we have a chance to digest them?
Yeah, since we were supposed to vote next week anyway, I would suggest that amendment requests should come in by Thursday so that I can file them with the second reading.
So everyone, and that essentially means that there will be no amendments entertained by the mayor the day of the return date, and if there are amendments, whether they address technical issues or broader issues, they will be disclosed to you well in advance of the hearing, and if there are no amendments, as Commissioner Fritz noted, it means there will probably be little drama when we come back for the vote.
And actually, a little off topic for those that are here besides the three of us, but Commissioner Fritz and I spoke about this earlier. I share your passion about getting amendments in advance, and we're going to proceed with a change in the council procedures so that ordinances are filed earlier than they have been up until now, and therefore...
We don't have agreement on that yet, sir.
We hope we have agreement on that, and therefore that no one will be surprised.
Well, so. Mayor, without belaboring it, I would settle. I mean, I've been in the desert on this for so long.
Well, you're getting company.
I would settle. I mean, I think it would be progress if, as a matter of professional courtesy, amendments were filed the day before a hearing. That's
I think we're going to do better than
I've
that.
I've been in the desert for long enough that the day before sounds good to me.
We can exceed your expectations.
Any day that you add is extra credit, sir, and we'll be taking consideration at Christmas time.
Any amendments, if you could send them to Tim Crail in my office, that would be helpful. Of course, any member of the council is also welcome to propose amendments, but get them to us by next Thursday, which is the 9th, preferably by noon, so that I can get them filed with the council clerk.
Okay.
And then we'll be voting on, what's the date again?
Morning of the 15th.
Yes.
The 15th.
No, the 20th.
Morning of the 15th.
Yeah, morning
of the 15th
at 9:30. But this will be listed on next week's agenda because we had to lock down the agenda for next week.
We'll just continue.
And we'll note that it's being continued to...
Don't come next week.
And it goes
unless you're interested in something else.
It goes without saying we appreciate the time people took to be with us today.
Yeah, thank you all very much. Very good testimony. Thank you. So we are adjourned for this week. Thank you very much.